Although the popular image of Henri Matisse's work is somewhat hedonistic with bold, bright colors and fluid forms, an exhibition that just opened at the Museum of Modern Art examines a five-year period of his career in which he limited his palette and focused on the formal structural aspects of his compositions. The show, called Matisse Radical Invention, 1913-1917, was created jointly by the Museum of Modern Art and the Art Institute of Chicago. And I'm joined now by its two curators, John Elderfield, the Museum of Modern Art's Chief Curator Emeritus of Painting and Sculpture, and Stephanie D'Alessandro, the Gary C. and Francis Comer Curator of Modern Art at the Art Institute of Chicago. I'm very pleased this exhibit has brought them to our show today. Hi, John.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
And Stephanie will be with us in just a moment, in fact. I've read that this is the first exhibit that focuses on this specific period of Matisse's career, which has been described as pivotal and seems to have been a bit of a departure for him. How did the idea to examine the short period of his career come about?
Well, it started because the biggest and probably the most ambitious picture of the period is in the Art Institute, the big Bathers by a River. And 5 years ago, just after MoMA's new building opened, I was in Chicago actually to give a lecture on the new galleries. And Stephanie said, "We have this painting in conservation. Do you want to come and look at it?" And I did. And it was fascinating to see what they're doing. But, you know, I've done a number of Matisse shows before and felt I wasn't going to do any more. But, you know, this project turned out to be so exciting, I just wanted to be part of it.
It was in conservation, Stephanie, because there was too much varnish on it. I've read that the varnish has been removed from about half the paintings in the show. Did Matisse put the varnish on, or did somebody else?
Well, Leonard, at the Art Institute, the varnish was put on because it was seen as a way to protect the picture. And, you know, Bathers by a River is 9 feet tall and 13 feet wide, and it's a picture that had traveled extensively and had received a little damage over the years. And I think that there was a period in time when many museum professionals saw varnish as a way to protect the work, make the colors brighter even. And what John and I came to see working with our colleagues in conservation was that Matisse wouldn't have varnished a picture like this at the time, and it really spurred us to take that varnish off and to think about taking the varnish off many other pictures. And when we did, we saw a whole new Matisse.
Well, you often read these days about museums removing old varnish from paintings, sometimes because it discolors, sometimes just because it goes against what the artist's original intentions were. How difficult is it to do that from a technical standpoint?
Well, it varies, of course, according to the painting.
Is it easier today?
It is easier today because conservation techniques are more sophisticated. There are some works with very fine canvases which it's more difficult to do, and obviously with a very large painting like the Chicago picture, it's an arduous process. And, you know, Stephanie, I can't quite remember how long they actually were working on it, but it was a long time.
It was quite a long time. Christine Lister was the conservator at the Art Institute who did the work, and I would say it would be fair that it might have taken her as much as a year working in phases to take the varnish off. It was a new varnish, not a natural varnish, so something that had some pretty heavy chemicals in it that made it difficult physically also to take off. But it's a very large picture, and one can't work quickly.
Well, I'm always surprised when this sort of thing happens because I always think of the varnishings and the like as being the sins of the 19th century, the 18th century.
Yeah.
And here we are with one of the two or three most significant figures in the history of 20th century art, and we're facing the same kinds of things. Should we be surprised that this period of his career hadn't been examined in such close detail until now?
Well, you know, in one way, yes, particularly in the United States, where there was more knowledge of his work than in Europe, and largely because, you know, a number of the great pictures ended up in the United States. And certainly,
we were early appreciators of
his
work.
We were very early appreciators. And in fact, recently, the artist's grandson, Claude Dutuy, in New York for the exhibition, said that without Russia on the one hand before World War I and without America after it, his father would have starved.
Real, and the most of the paintings in this exhibit are from these two collections. And some of the most significant works of this period are in the collections of either MoMA or the Art Institute. So people obviously choosing well.
Yeah, choosing well and choosing adventurously. And what complicates all this is that, you know, these things were painted during World War I, where the opportunities and desire to exhibit was limited. So some of them weren't seen until much, much later.
Stephanie, are these works more difficult to understand or less pleasing to look at than the work he did before and after this period? You've described this work as being among his most demanding and enigmatic.
I think that's right. And I think John and I sometimes joke that Matisse almost didn't do himself a favor when in 1908 he wrote an essay for the public to try to explain his work. And he used a kind of phrase to describe the kind of art he wanted to make as one that was like an easy chair for a mental worker. And I think he meant that he would give some kind of peace and sort of pleasure. But over the years, I think we've come to associate that phrase with some, especially works that he made during the Nice period, which are very lovely, but often have sort of images of contemplative nudes and beautiful landscapes and seascapes and women sort of luxuriating. And we forget about this man who struggled very much with his work. And the period of 13 to 17 is one where the works don't look like that.
Although
struggling.
Wasn't he already moving in this direction at times? Two of my favorite paintings come to mind, The Red Studio of 1911 and The Conversation, which I think he completed in 1912. That's at the Hermitage. If they had been included in this show, I would not have been surprised.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, I completely agree with you. I wouldn't have been surprised either. But I think one thing that's remarkable about Matisse is he never sort of wanted to finish a period and have it become a kind of parody. And so you can actually find moments earlier, before 13, where Matisse might have worked in a more experimental, demanding, adventurous kind of style, maybe make one work and leave it, and then we'll see a thread to another work a year later, 2 years later. And when we started our exhibition and worked on our catalog, we very much wanted to have a kind of a section at the beginning of both that would lay some of the groundwork for what would happen in a more sustained way between 13 and 17.
Well, walking through this show, I was struck by the thought that he had given himself permission to try anything.
Yeah.
And not to worry whether certain things would work out better than others.
I think absolutely. And in fact, you know, I think in this period, more than any other, it's picture by picture. And I've had people say to me, you know, are they all by the same artist? You know, and of course they're all by the same artist. We recognize, you know, certain common features, but we recognize also that, you know, he never allows himself to go into production. You know, that, you know, there's some cases where he does the similar sort of thing. There's a wall of still lifes in the exhibition where he's developing a motif, but generally he's starting and seeing where it's going to take him.
And sometimes it takes him to a dead end. Some of the paintings that were obviously influenced by Cubism don't really work out all that well. But then there are other things that are just extraordinary, including a couple of three paintings at least that are almost total abstractions. There are a couple of paintings of windows and curtains, and then there's this the Museum of Modern Art's incredible painting of Notre Dame that just seems to be one step away from being totally non-objective.
Yeah, but I think that he always stopped himself. He always was an artist who responded to his external environment. And, you know, this is, I think, one reason why in 1917 he pulled away from where he was going. He felt that if he kept going on this path, he would be into abstraction and therefore into what he called a kind of mannerism of you know, picking up the mannerisms which appear in the paintings, which aren't mannerisms in the paintings because they're invented there. But they could be if they're not tied to an external subject, which he always believed in.
My guests are John Elderfield, Museum of Modern Art's Chief Curator Emeritus of Painting and Sculpture, and Stephanie D'Alessandro, the Gary C. and Francis Comer Curator of Modern Art at the Art Institute of Chicago. We're talking about the exhibit Matisse Radical Invention, 1913-1917, now at the Museum of Modern Art. It was at the Art Institute not long ago. And by the way, we have an amazing slideshow with 14 images from the show on our show page at wnyc.org. Matisse was Stephanie. Matisse was already a well-known artist in 1913. He had been the leader of the Fauves. There is a little of Fauvism in this work. You seem to be arguing in the show that he changed his artistic focus after he returned to Paris from a trip to Morocco.
Yeah, I think we can see Matisse. He comes back from Morocco. He's made a beautiful body of works. But when he returns, he doesn't pick up much of what he had just been doing. Instead, we see him returning to Bathers by a River, a project he had started in 1909, picking it up with gusto and completely changing the picture in about 6 months' time from something that was pastel and pastoral and in many ways actually related to that Fauve period, and changing it into a picture by November 1913 that is completely grayed down and very abstracted, cubist-looking in many ways, and beginning also to work on a group of paintings, three, over the summer that are in the color blue, primarily the color blue, and increasingly moving away from a kind of painting that has a lot of narrative detail in it to something that's about form and structure and balance in the pictures. And I think that very clear focus suggests Matisse making a break from what he had just done and the beginning of something very clear, very new.
Many of the paintings have an unfinished appearance, even when they're done. There are often areas of canvas that aren't even touched. Was that intentional, or was he leaving them to be returned to as so many of these other paintings were returned
to? I think what's interesting about his process is that, indeed, he's working like this. And, you know, some of them are actually, even now, you know, 100 years later, seem alarming in the fact that they have unfinished areas. So we have to think, what would they have looked like at the time? And we do, in fact, believe that with two pictures, he did leave them and wasn't really sure where to go. But he didn't destroy them. You know, he kept them on, and even if he didn't exhibit them during his lifetime, you know, we have to wonder what that means. You know, that an artist can do something which he finds so surprising that maybe he doesn't want to share it with anyone.
World War I was also being fought in and around Paris during some of this time. Could that have had an impact on the nature of these paintings?
Well, I think it had to. I mean, we know that he badly wanted to participate in the war, but he wasn't allowed to. And
because he was too old.
He was too old, and he had a weak heart. And, you know, he felt, you know, that he really wanted to be there. And I think he even felt a little ashamed that he couldn't be there. And therefore, he wanted to concentrate as hard as he could on his work. He did do particularly prints, which he sold to help, you know, prisoners, civilian prisoners who were in German war camps. But the main thing, I think, was to focus on his work as hard as he could and push himself to a kind of extreme quality.
And included in the exhibit are some monotypes, which seem to be extraordinary. The lines, very simple line drawings that tell you everything. Just a circle that you know is an apple, and you almost feel the weight of an apple.
Mm-hmm. I think that those monotypes are also so important for the show because Matisse only made them between 13 and 17. So there must have been something in the look of them, in the process of them, that was very appealing to him for the time. I think it has to do with this beautiful black field and this, as you say, this beautiful, fragile, very simple line that says so much and seems so monumental in a way, even though some of these works are so small. And I think in connection to the war, it's important to remember that in 1916, when Matisse kind of comes back to painting after a period when he's not making art, that his canvases become also very large. The works that he makes almost for 6-7 months in 1916 are Moroccans, Piano Lesson, and Bathers by a River. And there's this kind of monumental quality to these works that I think is, in a way, ironically, very much attached to these small monotypes.
And before he died in 1954, Matisse identified two of those paintings as being among the most pivotal in his career, Bathers by a River and the Moroccans. Did he explain why, out of all of his work, he felt those paintings were so significant?
No, I think, you know, he left it to us.
Well, because it's also interesting, Peter Sheldahl, in his review of the show, says that his favorite painting is The Piano Lesson, and that's been one of my favorites throughout my life It just seems to be one of the most profound paintings. But it didn't seem to work that way for Matisse.
Well, it's interesting. We don't know. I mean, he said there were five paintings, and the only two we know of are those two. He may well have mentioned the piano lesson, but we don't know it. I mean, I do think it's the most perfected of the pictures of that period, which isn't necessarily to say the most emotionally strong.
Well, one aspect of this exhibit that's especially interesting is the documentation you've included on how you use high-tech methods, including digital imaging, laser scanning, and ultraviolet illumination to study how Matisse created some of the paintings, in particular the Bathers by the River. Did you know before you began your high-tech investigation that Matisse had worked on Bathers by the River for more than 7 years and had revised it so much over all of those times, six times or so?
We did know that he had revised the picture somewhat, but we started our research because we weren't even sure, really, whether the painting was related to this commission in 1909 and had been started in 1909. And working with conservators and conservation scientists and technicians and archivists and researchers, we were able to go back and pull together not just information from the painting, but checking and finding new documentation, a beautiful watercolor, for example, made by Matisse's son, Pierre, in 1910, that became a kind of documentation, a kind of confirmation of the existence of this giant canvas in his father's studio. So pulling all of that together, we were able to learn more. But we did know a little. There was this photograph of the painting in 1913 in November, looking very surprising and very different than the way it does now. And there had been an X-ray that was done in 1977. It was 122 plates of film and cut, literally sort of old-fashioned, cut and pasted back together so that we could see this full image. So we had some idea that the painting had been reworked and reworked, but pulling together art history and this new technology and the great eyes of our conservators, we were able to really find some definite sort of moments in time that we could confirm at least six stages. Of course, it's very possible Matisse worked on that painting and others in our show at other points as well, but these were the sort of landmark moments that we could confirm.
He seemed to go through similar changes in working on these monumental bronze reliefs that the Museum of Modern Art owns. Is there a dialogue, do you think, between that painting and the changes he was going through and those sculptures?
There's definitely a dialogue. I mean, we know that the first sculpture, which was begun in 1908 and finished in 1909, is actually at the same time is making the early big figure compositions, and in the period when Bathers by a River begins. And the second and third states extend through the period of Bathers by a River. And, what we've done in the installation of the exhibition in New York, as it was in Chicago, is not to show them in a line, but to show them at the time they were made in relationship to the paintings that were made around them. And they look different.
Did you do a study on the piano lesson? Did it go through similar revisions?
It did. We know that it began in a very detailed, naturalistic way. There's a drawing showing this where the garden is full of bushes and detail, and he gradually eliminated it and reduced it to this, very severe, beautiful quality it is now.
Stephanie, the exhibit includes work Matisse created up until he moved to Nice in 1917. Did he give any reason for leaving Paris at that time? And how much did his style change once he moved to Nice?
Well, I think his style changed quite a bit. And there's a wonderful quote from 1919 that Matisse makes for an interviewer about knowing that it's time to move on, to change course, almost as a matter of hygiene, just keeping oneself fresh, I think, and keeping one's mind moving and challenged in different directions. When he moves to Nice, we can see some of the interest that he has during the 13 to 17 period, and perhaps not this kind of connection to cubism or this kind of abstract or reduced kind of way of the look of pictures, but we see still Matisse working with paint, almost like clay, laying it on thickly, scratching and scraping into the surface. And what I love so much is the idea of Matisse recalling this period of 13 to 17, even at the end of his life, when he makes his beautiful paper cutouts, and he talks about carving into color when he's cutting those big, beautiful colored sheets. And that approach of scraping and scratching, which is also a part of the 13 to 17 moment, is something that Matisse surely pulled from, you know, his experiments at this time. So I think there's a stylistic change, certainly, as he moves to Nice, but the process perhaps continues for a good period of time.
Matisse is one of those rare artists who could change styles and then produce a lot of great works in a totally new style, again and again, to the end, where he does those cutouts, and that jazz series being one of the high points of 20th century art. But you have looked at another high point. This is 1913 to 1917 in the show called Matisse, Radical Invention. It's at the Museum of Modern Art until?
Early October.
And you can see a slideshow of 14 images from the show at WNYC.org. My great thanks to John Elderfield and Stephanie D'Alessandro for talking with us today on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you.